You're listening to Sciencing the Shit Out of MS, part of the Classroom Psychology Network. And now, here's your host, Dr. Cora Sargent. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sciencing the Shit Out of MS. I am your host, Cora. I don't know why I'm speaking like this. Hello and welcome. Jump on in here. It's so lovely to see you. Thanks so much for hopping on in, spending some time together, and planting seeds in the garden of our mental health so that we can watch them grow and flourish. And then we can flourish. That's sort of the idea. So thanks very much for joining me. And I can see that the garden of our mental health is doing quite well. There are lots of seeds that we've been planting and maybe some shoots beginning to sprout. Is that the word? Shoots? Do shoots sprout? Shoots? Do sprouts shoot? I have no idea. But maybe some plants are starting to grow. We started with acceptance and activation, the idea that we're going to accept how things are, whatever the state of play might be, and then we're going to do the things that make us happy in the world regardless. Cognitive reappraisal, the notion that we're going to change our perception of this thing from threat to challenge. For sure, it has been challenging recently for me. I had a little bit of a fall in my living room because I tried to exercise too hard. Now, if you're thinking, but maybe that means that your optimism is better than it once was, Cora, for sure, I think that might be true. I think I got a bit optimistic and maybe a little bit ambitious as I tried to do some pretty significant exercise in my living room and fell on my ass. I'm now a little bit wounded, but only mildly. We'll be fine. But, you know, just goes to show MS is a challenge and will continue to be so. But seeing it as such, you know, we overcome challenges. We run away from threats, potentially. So we're going to see this as a challenge. We're going to continue to do so. And maybe me injuring myself is just being a little ambitious. We're also going to keep the best possible self-intervention in the back pocket, ready for times when I'm feeling particularly like I don't have a lot of optimism. And I heard a professor of psychology, can't remember her name, forgive me, and I listened to a lot of podcasts, generally speaking, around psychology, because I love it so much. If you're interested to listen along, there's a couple of really good ones. Scott Barry Kaufman does the psychology podcast, absolutely cracking podcast. And Stephen Dubner and Angela Duckworth, they do one called No Stupid Questions, covers a lot more psychology than you might anticipate, and it's actually really interesting. It wasn't in either of those, though. I can't remember who it was. But they made a recommendation around optimism to make sure there's something in the diary that you can look forward to. And to be mindful of diary events that fill you with a bit more dread. And of course, multiple sclerosis has a lot of those. We have a ton of medical appointments, ton of scans. And often it's good news and sometimes it's bad news. And I've had lots of situations where the news has not been ideal. So they say to add something nice into the diary deliberately to buttress the dread, to sort of make yourself feel better on days when you know you're going to be, you know, experiencing something tricky. So that's really cool. I'm going to put something in the diary to make sure I've always got something in there, even if it's a little something to look forward to. And then mindfulness. Whoa, mindfulness is a bit of a corker. It's been a bit of a game changer for me, I think. I've been doing mindfulness every night just before sleep. So literally like, in bed, listen to mindfulness, 10 minutes, and often by the end of the mindfulness session, I'm already asleep. So last night I had a really fun experience where I was listening to mindfulness, sort of just drifting, like making sure that I focused on my breathing and just staying like very peaceful, very in the moment. And then I woke up, must have been like 10, 20 minutes later, my headphones still on my head. And nothing playing because I'd already been through the mindfulness. So I took my headphones off and went to sleep. Amazing. I've been sleeping really well, not perfectly. I still have bad nights. The MS sometimes comes at you sideways, right? But, you know, I have more good nights than bad nights. And the mindfulness, I think, is really helping. So that's a real corker. I also do mindfulness every morning. It's kind of the first thing I do when I wake up. I can take it or leave it a little bit in the morning, if I'm completely honest with you. But I'm going to continue to do it because I have faith that it will yield benefit. I'm also going to go and do mindfulness-based stress reduction. I managed to get myself into an introductory session of mindfulness, and hopefully that will lead to a proper kind of, you know, it's a gateway mindfulness into something more significant. And then last time, we talked about random acts of kindness. Amazingly, on the 17th, actually, you'll see that, you know, 2 days after that episode aired, was International Random Acts of Kindness Day, which is bananas. I'd had no idea that the episode we were doing on Random Acts of Kindness was coming 2 days before a day dedicated to them. So for sure, you know, Random Acts of Kindness, that's also been a bit of a game changer. So I try and do 3 little things every day and 1 big one each month. You'll note that in the last episode, I went and paid for somebody's shopping. Now, I recorded that episode just before Christmas, so that was a while ago. And more recently, about a week or two ago, my brother and I went to a bakery. We bought a dozen random baked goods. None of them had nuts in. And we took them to my local GP surgery, because my local GP surgery saved my ass over the summer real hard. They really helped me out through a really difficult period. And so I wanted to give back. Though I didn't want to say, hey, I'm doing this because. I just said, hey, you know, please enjoy. We think you're great and I hope you enjoy them. Maybe, you know, the pharmacy next door, you want to let them know and share these with them. Or maybe you want to hide them from the pharmacy so that you don't have to share them. Completely up to you. But I hope they enjoyed those things. And absolutely, you know, the Random Acts of Kindness literature highlights that this is good for us, good for them, good for everybody watching. We're not putting these anywhere, right? Like, there's no recording this for TikTok or anything. That's not the point. The point isn't for me to kind of benefit from those acts. In fact, the research is pretty clear. The acts must be primarily for the benefit of the other person for me to develop the sort of psychological benefits that we're looking for. So I have to maintain that perspective every time we do it. I'm not even going to mention it on this podcast anymore, I don't think. I'm just going to keep doing them. I'll let you know if any are really good, though, just to kind of, you know, because you might want to know some stuff. You know, you might want to do your own cool things. Who knows? By the way, if you come up with any really awesome acts of kindness that you have implemented, or if you want to see, you know, you wanna let us know about a topic you'd like us to cover, come find me on Twitter. You'll find me at Classroom Psych. You can find me there. Don't hesitate to get on in there and let me know if there are any cool acts of kindness that you've done. I'd love to hear about them. So yeah, the only other thing that I am doing on the reg in terms of acts of kindness, apart from like remembering birthdays and really thinking about what people would like, getting people really cool cards, or, you know, just trying to kind of think about people more and do more things like that. I also have been doing things like I've been recording this thing, me reading a book on a new stupid YouTube series that's called Cora's Corner, where I just talk about, you know, I read a book. I've got a nephew who's about 18 months. I'm immunosuppressed, so it's a bit difficult for me to see him very frequently because he's sick more often than he's not, I think. And I need to be a bit cautious there. But I read him a book, you know, every week, if I can, on YouTube, so he can watch me reading him a random story. I think that's kind of cool. So yeah, more acts of kindness, more cool things in the world. These are helpful things for us to keep doing. What a cool place we're getting to ourselves, right? And I don't know, I hope that you're finding it too, that these things are connected to the like connection, meaning, purpose. They're connected to lifting ourselves into something wonderful that's beyond ourselves, right? We're not just focused on the MS, we're focused on other things, whether it be like focused on the mindfulness and focusing on the here and now, being in the present, whether it's focusing on a positive future, whether it's focusing on other people to help them to help them in some small way. We're trying to move into a sort of more transpersonal phase of existence. We're trying to do something that's outside of ourselves, so we're not focused on the MS just so frequently. And that is connected to what we call the eudaimonic staircase, right? If we're doing things for meaning and purpose in the world, then that will continue to self-perpetuate. So this is all good stuff. Today, we're going to talk about gratitude. Gratitude as a new seed to plant in this garden, it's actually not so well evidenced as I was hoping. There's not a lot of research around gratitude and multiple sclerosis, which is really interesting, although gratitude is well evidenced more broadly. So there's a few big studies, Crouch's, Smedema's, and there's a couple by Smedema, and then there's Craig and Cheevans. They're all in the last few years, and they all look at quality of life in multiple sclerosis in various forms, and they basically find that gratitude interventions are... what they find is that gratitude is a good thing for people to have, to be grateful in the world. They define gratitude, or Emmons and Stern in 2013 define gratitude as a state of affirming the goodness or good things in one's life, accompanied by a recognition that the sources of this goodness lie at least partially outside the self, such as with the good intentions of other people. So it's about kind of recognizing the sort of privileges of one's life, the good things in one's life that maybe we often take for granted, and recognizing that other people are a big part of that, that other people in the world have supported us and have, you know, have been responsible for a lot of those good things, and we could feel grateful for that. And I think that's also about kind of, you know, the wider, again, the transpersonal stuff of like, you know, if we're feeling grateful for these things, then it also gives us a sort of a faith in humanity that we might otherwise lack, and an optimism for the future because these other people are in our lives and our lives are better for it. So I think gratitude kind of loops in nice ways to lots of other elements of the Garden of Mental Health. You know, our Garden of Mental Health is full of vines and creepers that they wind in together and lean on each other, and it all kind of comes together quite nicely. So gratitude seemingly, you know, can only be a good thing, right? It's a state of affirming the goodness or good things in one's life, accompanied by a recognition that other people are responsible for those good things. Wonderful. Now, basically, the research suggests pretty strongly that gratitude is a good thing, right? Gratitude is no bad thing. And when it comes to characteristic strengths, we're going to do an episode on characteristic strengths. It's a really big part of positive psychology. Characteristic strengths are 24 different strengths that people can have more of or less of. And different people have different strengths, and that's a wonderful thing. And if gratitude is one of your strengths, then it can be connected to better quality of life in MS. Now, you might immediately suggest, as I might immediately suggest, but gratitude as a sort of characteristic strength or as a sort of individual difference factor isn't the same as gratitude that somebody has kind of prompted through an intervention, right? And you're right. You're absolutely right that just because gratitude might not be one of your characteristic strengths right now, can we make it a characteristic strength through intervention? That's a big question that I don't think I can answer. And it seems that some of the most recent work is really calling into question whether gratitude can be, you know, whether sort of whether manipulated gratitude in that way, whether a gratitude intervention has the same kind of positive outcomes. Now, I don't think anybody's suggesting that it doesn't have positive outcomes, but some of the recent stuff is suggesting that maybe it's a bit of a placebo effect. So Craig and Cheevans, 2021, Gratitude Interventions, Effective Self-Help, a meta-analysis of the impact on symptoms of depression and anxiety. This is from the Journal of Happiness Studies. How freaking cool is that journal name? They basically find that there are two big gratitude interventions, right? One of them is a three good things intervention, and the other is a gratitude visit. Now, the three good things intervention basically invites people to keep a daily record of three good things and explained why they happened to you for one full week. That's like the three good things. So you spend some time appreciating those three good things, writing them down, and writing why they happened. Three good things. And the other is the gratitude visit, where you write and then personally deliver a letter to someone you've never properly thanked. Now that's difficult to do. I mean, obviously, it's a bigger intervention. And Seligman found that the three good things exercise leads to reduced depressive symptoms for up to 6 months, but that the gratitude visit had the stronger effect, but for shorter term, so up to 1 month. So Seligman basically found, wow, these interventions are pretty strong. But, Craig and Shevens, on their sort of big meta-analysis, started to question these results. They found that they're quite small, particularly when you're looking at kind of active control groups. So some of these studies look at control groups, they say, you know, think of something, you know, they don't do something neutral, they say, you think of something negative that happened to you or something like that. So it's not a neutral control group. And when they look at a control group, when they focus on control groups that are doing something that could be reasonably assumed to have a positive impact on you, then the effects are sort of pretty much like not much at all. And their conclusion is that they agree with Davis, who did one a similar meta-analysis in 2016, that an explanation of gratitude interventions may be that they operate primarily through placebo effects, at least for depression and anxiety symptoms. So that's pretty interesting. That's not the most optimistic view of gratitude as an intervention, but that's not with multiple sclerosis specifically. With multiple sclerosis specifically, I think we find some interesting effects. So Crouch and colleagues in 2020, gratitude is positively associated with quality of life in multiple sclerosis in rehabilitation psychology. They have this really interesting idea that in MS specifically and other chronic illnesses, people tend to focus their time and energy, their attention on the difficulties of the disease. Of course, the difficulties of the disease are pronounced. They are degenerative in many ways. They are problematic. They get in the way of your life. So you're going to focus on them. But what they suggest is that because of that, that focus actually exacerbates the emotional impact of the disease. And they were saying that gratitude might extend the focus of people with multiple sclerosis beyond themselves, increasing their appreciation for other parts of life despite their medical condition, despite what they're experiencing. So the point is that gratitude, a bit like mindfulness, might change our attentional focus, right? So instead of focusing on the difficulties of the disease, the problems that the disease yields, we focus on something other than that, whether it be the present moment in mindfulness or on the positive things that we're experiencing, the things for which we can feel really grateful, that pulls our attention away from these negative effects. And that might be different to for the general population, right? Because the general population, their attention isn't being drawn by a chronic disease in the same way. So we might find unique effects here in a way that we wouldn't find elsewhere. Now, so essentially, these guys also found that individual perceptions or interpretation of their fatigue symptoms specifically can impact people's experience of the disease, right? So one of the things that they find, one of the things that they consider is that if you are feeling negative about the world, if you're feeling negative about yourself, if you're feeling pessimistic, you feel like the fatigue is overwhelming, and it may well be. But the fatigue and the perception of the fatigue are two separate things. And if you perceive the fatigue to be extremely poor, then it might exacerbate your experience of the fatigue itself. And again, mindfulness and then gratitude are two separate ways to just kind of bias attention away from that, feeling more positive about the things about which we can feel grateful. So what they're suggesting is that more balanced symptom interpretations and beliefs might decrease the very negative effects of fatigue on quality of life. So rather than kind of the catastrophic interpretation of severe fatigue, we can feel grateful for other things. We can feel grateful for the things that we can do, for the things in our life that we can feel really appreciative of. And that can lead to a more balanced symptom interpretation when it comes to fatigue. And that can then alleviate some of the effect on quality of life. So this is really good. I don't mean to suggest that that fatigue isn't a real thing, and that your fatigue isn't a real thing, or my fatigue isn't a real thing. It absolutely is. But if we can, you know, when we first came into this, y'all, we came up with there was a point, right? A point that we made that positive psychology is fundamentally built around, where it comes to multiple sclerosis, that yeah, the disease comes with suffering, but there are certain ways of thinking, certain ways of attending to the disease psychologically that might make us suffer more than we need to. And this is the point that Crouch and colleagues are making, is that if we recruit mindfulness, if we recruit gratitude, then we can change the way that we think about the disease a little bit, and that can improve our quality of life. And surely quality of life is where it's at, right? We can't take away the fatigue, but maybe we can change how we see it. Maybe we can change what we're focusing on. So much of mental health is what we choose to notice, I think. And this is something cool. If we're choosing to notice, habitually notice the wonderful things in life that we're grateful for, maybe, just maybe, that will help us to feel a little bit better in the world. So, essentially, Crouch and colleagues sort of conclude by saying grateful thinking may help individuals focus on their energy and ability rather than their fatigue and disability. And that's really cool. So I'm open to that idea. I looked as deeply as I could. I could only find 7 studies that connected multiple sclerosis to gratitude, and most of them were looking at characteristic strengths, not an intervention. There are no systematic reviews of gratitude in MS or other chronic illnesses. So I couldn't find anything that would conclude this. You know, I couldn't find something that would help us to say yes or no to gratitude. All I can say is that in the broader literature for the broad population, it looks very much like gratitude interventions work primarily through placebo. But we shouldn't underestimate the power of placebo. Placebo is really good. And when it comes to MS, there's a good hypothesized mechanism through which it might genuinely help people with MS in a way that it couldn't help people in the general population. In the similar way to mindfulness, it just biases attention towards something more positive than the disability and the fatigue that we're experiencing. So that's potentially amazing, right? That's a mechanism I can get behind. I can't promise anything. There's no evidence to suggest that this is absolutely going to work. I can't, you know, there's no big systematic review that says, yes, this will work. But this is a seed I am going to plant in my mental health. And the reason is because it fits so well with the concept of mindfulness, that we're going to pull our attention. You know, the more things I can pull into my regular, the regular tending to my mental health garden, the more things that I can put in there that I can, like, bias my attention towards something positive and away from the negative, can only, I think, be good for my mental health. I'm not ignoring the negative aspects of this disease. They certainly won't let me ignore it. But I can habitually think about other things rather than, or to compete with, the habitual thinking about really negative things. Going to habitually think about the wonderful things in life. that's the aim. So we're going to try and do. We've got to tend to this garden of mental health. It's going to take some work. All right. So how are we going to do this? I am going to try and do the 3 positive things intervention. I'm going to try to think of 3 things every day that I can be grateful for, and try and think of why those things happened in the world. Try and think positively about what made those things happen. Feel grateful for the world around me. And then, you're all right then, fine, I'm going to do it. I'll do a gratitude visit. I will write a letter of gratitude to somebody, and I will go and visit, and I will go and deliver that letter to them. I'll do it. All right. Ugh, that one sounds like a proper corker. I can do it. I have to do some thinking about who I want to feel grateful for, who feels like they've done some wonderful stuff, and I've never really had the chance to thank them. Ugh. I'm going to have to do it. I don't even know. I have no idea. There's so many people in my life who I want to be grateful for. I'm going to have to do some work. We'll think about it. And then when we come back next time, I think we've got so many interesting topics in positive psychology to focus on. I don't know where we're going to go next. whether we wind up in Grit. I really like the idea of doing an episode on Grit. Angela Duckworth's focal kind of one of the key theories that she came up with, Grit. How do we stick at things when the times are tough? Characteristic strengths I'd like to do an episode on. Trying to look at the various ways in which we can feel like our positive strengths, the things that make us who we are, our signature strengths can be recruited in the world. Maybe social support. I really want to do one on social support. Oh, I'd really like to do one on fostering and developing our positive relationships in the world. Next time, we're going to do one of those. I don't know. You're going to have to find out next time which one we're going to do. Be a surprise. Thanks so very much for joining us. I am so very grateful. You know what? I'm grateful for you. Maybe you're the people who I will be grateful for this week. For sure, you are going to be one of the people in my gratitude diary, as I am grateful for you coming and joining us here. Thanks so much for joining me. Look forward to seeing you next time.